Come on, man. We need to work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you as we are recapping the 31-24 victory over the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. The Giants snapped that three-game losing streak. They get back on the winning track, and we now have a three-way tie atop the NFC East standings with the Redskins and the Eagles. So we'll go over the ins and outs of the game. We'll look ahead to the Carolina Panthers. It's a very short week, a quick turnaround for the Giants. We'll get into a lot on the phones at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. And, Paul, unlike the last few games, the Giants found a way to close out this contest. And to me, that 10-play, 35-yard drive with 4.5 minutes left on the clock, in the last few games, the Giants' offense had gotten the ball, and we've seen some three and outs. We saw some punts where you had to put the defense back on the field. The offense got the job done, and what was also a nice, pleasant bonus was the fact that they did it with the running game, which was also something that hadn't been brought to the forefront in the last few games.
You know I love to take notes on every play, absolutely, right? And what I had here, with about 4.5 to go, and remember now, they've got Pugh playing left tackle at this point because Flowers is out with a re-sprained ankle. You've got Dallas Reynolds playing left guard, not John Jerry. Interesting decision there to go with Reynolds. And the Giants, after a punt, are starting first and 10 at their own 20. And Rashad Jennings, who had 22 carries for 81 yards, both season highs for him. And by the way, the 22 carries, the most by a Giants running back, period, this season. No one has carried anywhere near that many times in a game this year. He had it going. He was running strong. He was running powerful. He had a rhythm going. He carries the ball 5 times on that drive to help milk the clock, including what I thought was the biggest play of the drive, 3rd and 2 at the Giants 28, left tackle run for 3, Giants first down. I thought that was the key play of that drive. Now, Coach Coughlin talked about he thought the slant to Harris, which came up just a couple of plays later, was the key play to the drive. I'm going to go to the 3rd down run by Jennings because, as we've seen this season, 9 times out of 10, the Giants don't get it. And this time, he got it. And he was like a pit bull trying to just muzzle his way through for the 1st down. So I commend you for bringing that up right away because everyone's talking about Beckham. Everybody's talking about Eli Manning. I get all of that. This is, when you peel back the onion, this is what absolutely really won the game for the Giants because they haven't been locking people out.
That final drive, to me, that sums it up. And it's the obvious play, Paul, but the one other play I'll add to that drive, and this is the one that sealed it, the 5-yard catch by Odell Beckham when he secured the football on the 3rd and 3. You know, he doesn't make that. Remember, there's still a little time. Dolphins get the ball back. The fact that he got that catch, hauled that in, it was confirmed by replay. That would be another play that I would throw in there. But you're right, the Jennings 1st down, that was the initial 1st down that got the offense going on that final drive.
The only reason that I put more emphasis on the Jennings play is because we've seen Beckham make those kinds of catches before. It was a hard catch. In fact, there was a guy from the Dolphins, one of their officials, who was standing next to me. And as he's watching the replay, he goes, oh, you can see that ball pops up a little bit. I said, yeah, because his fingers are under it, and the ball bounced off of his fingers. He clearly had his hands underneath the ball. That's, to me, you expect that to be made. What you don't expect, based on the evidence before us, is that the Giants are going to be able to run for a 1st down on 3rd and 2. So that's why I'm putting more credence or more plaudits, if you will, in the Jennings run than I am the Beckham catch. But you're absolutely right because that was the second of the 2 3rd down conversions they had on the drive.
And you look at the box score. If you didn't watch anything in this game, Paul, you'd see 32 carries, 92 yards, 2.9 yards per carry. So you'd figure the Giants were not very effective on the ground. And the numbers don't jump off the page. But in this game, given the volume of the work, Paul, the running game to me played a big role in getting that offense going and providing balance. And here's an interesting stat. When the Giants have run the ball at least 25 times this season, they're 5-0. So volume has dictated wins versus losses, and the fact that they were able to pound the football enough throughout the course of the game, I mean, that was a big difference maker, even though the numbers don't really jump out at you and say, wow, they were really getting a lot of yardage per carry.
Could not agree with you more. It's one of the reasons why the Giants had the ball more than the Dolphins did. It was only a half a minute more, but they were over the 30-minute mark in time of possession. And that, to me, is, again, a good sign for this team, because that's not something they've really done very well. And that all goes back to not having a power running game, to not being able to close out games, not being able to run a four-minute offense. You know, you saw some things here that were good. Some core things, not just like, okay, an occasional flash of a play. You saw core things, things that you have to have as your base if you're going to be a good football team. The Giants did last night. That's what, to be honest with you folks, makes me more excited about this game than the fact that they beat a mediocre Miami Dolphins team that had like a dozen penalties and certainly had opportunities themselves to get the, you know, to get a win and to fight the Giants and maybe escape with a victory. I'm looking at the Giants saying they did some things last night that they just have to do, fundamental stuff.
And in addition to pounding the football, Paul, one of the things that you want to see them continue to do, they got back to that spreading of the wealth in the passing game. You had four players that had five receptions apiece. You had Will Tye get his first career touchdown. Randall had five and a touchdown. Dwayne Harris had five catches. We obviously know what Odell Beckham did. But the last few games, it's been Beckham with an enormous amount of targets, and then there's a huge disparity and drop-off the rest of the way. That wasn't the case. Beckham had nine targets, and then you had three other players with at least five targets apiece.
Yes, I thought that was very interesting because Howard Cross and I were talking on the post-game show, and he initially brought up, and I wasn't thinking about it quite right away, but he said, hey, you know, Will Tye had a pretty good game, not just a touchdown. And I said, Howard, you know what? He caught five passes tonight. And, you know, that's the kind of production you get from these ancillary guys. You know, Dwayne Harris does catch that slant on the final drive. Will Tye not only catches a touchdown, but has four other grabs in the game. That's the kind of other stuff that you need to happen because, you know, as great as Beckham is, and now that's a team record, six straight 100-yard games in a season. Let's not kid ourselves. Nobody's stopping him. I hate to ever say that as a football guy, that somebody is totally unstoppable, because I believe everybody is stoppable if you're willing to devote the resources to it. I've seen people double Beckham. I've seen people bracket Beckham. I've seen people try to jam him at the line. I've seen people at times use three people in a triangular zone like a basketball play.
Yeah.
They haven't done it. Haven't stopped him. I mean, Lance, I'm not kidding. They may have finally found an unstoppable guy.
Well, he's taking advantage of all of his opportunities. Even if he's got five guys draped on his back, it makes no difference. He'll find a way to make the play.
I mean, to me, and you know, I know Anita likes to say this, but I'm going to steal it from her if I can. You know, when they say you got to cut the head off the snake to make it happen, the best way to stop Beckham is to disrupt the pass.
You know, bat it down at the line of scrimmage.
Bat it down
like
at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Hurry Eli so that he throws it erratically, because if he lines up Odell Beckham and he gets it in that box, he's getting it.
And the teams that have actually quieted Odell Beckham, Paul, have been the ones that either got to Eli Manning with a strong pass rush or got deflections. I mean,
yeah,
those are the games where Beckham didn't explode. He was relatively quiet. If you look at the Philadelphia game, you know, games where the pass rush got rolling for the opposition, that tends to quiet him down. But when you're going in offensive clinic mode, Beckham's going to get his catches and is going to put up production.
Yeah, without question. You know, he's had a couple of balls ripped out of his hands after he caught them the last few weeks. That's a different story. Is he going to get his hands on the ball? Is he going to grab it? Chances are real good that's going to happen. I want to mention one other thing before we get to the calls and the tweets, Lance. Something that I saw on the sidelines that, you know, you did not see on television. I know you didn't read it in the papers, but I'm going to tell you it happened, and it's a pretty cool thing. Beckham catches the winning touchdown pass, or at the time, the go-ahead touchdown pass. You didn't know if it was going to hold up and win the game. He comes back to the bench, and yes, he has his conversation with Eli. That's been well documented. But then he goes up to each of the defensive backs on the bench, and he starts giving them a pep talk. I got this touchdown. We're up. Hold it. Come on, guys. Let's go. Specifically, he went up to Trevin Wade. And Wade drew Jarvis Landry most of the night, okay, in coverage. That's a heck of an assignment. And he did a pretty good job, I might add. Landry had one really good big play. Other than that, it was relatively methodical. And he spent a lot of time with him in particular, trying to spark him, trying to give him an extra jolt because, hey, you're my teammate. We got the lead. Now, go out and make sure I didn't waste this touchdown. I thought that was pretty cool.
No, and that's been a big part of the last few victories or the last notable games. Eric Flowers did that early in the season, grabbing guys, trying to motivate them. You know, we've seen some of the young players on this team try to be aggressive in terms of their vocal leadership and so forth. So that's certainly nice to see. And I have a question. You mentioned that you saw this on the sideline. Was that the period of time where you emerged from the fan and was staring down at Odell Beckham and Eli Manning? Because they were in the vicinity. So did that coincide with one another?
That was right after the long bomb
yes.
that put the Giants ahead. And I was down there with Lisa Marie Latino, our associate producer. She was on the sideline duty with me yesterday. And I was right behind the bench when Eli and Beckham were discussing the fact that they had basically drawn up this play. It was not part of the playbook. It had not been practiced during the course of the week. But Eli had seen something on film that he liked, and he thought Beckham could make a move and take advantage of. So he apparently pulled Beckham aside the other day after practice and said, look, I want to show you something. If we get this look, watch for me because this is where I want to go. And so the two of those guys had this ESP kind of thing that they were going to pull this sucker out of their pocket if they saw the right scenario. Not that they're going rogue or anything, folks. Understand that. But they really had it in their mind that they could hit this sucker. And so they go out there, and they hit it. So now they come back to the bench, and I'm standing back there, and Eli's, like, using his fingers, like, drawing an air at one point, and he's telling Beckham, just like we saw. You remember when safety did this, and he went this way, and you did it just, and it worked, and Beckham's like, yeah, that's right, exactly like we thought it was going to go. So it was them confirming to each other in excitement at how their MacGyver-type play, if you will. You yes. remember MacGyver. You're,
oh,
not, you're not that young, right?
MacGyver. Give me some credit.
Their MacGyver-type play wound up working to perfection, and then it was after that Beckham went to the defensive backs. Shortly thereafter, within a few seconds after he was done with Eli, he went to the defensive backs and then expressed his excitement and enthusiasm over their opportunity to then close out the game.
So that is the backstory, people, in case you're lost.
There you go.
There's a video circulating of Paul Dottino emerging from behind the fan and observing Odell Beckham and Eli Manning. Now we got the juicy details.
Do I still have the NFL Network graphics circling my head? It felt like
a
ball collar when I was watching it on TV.
It's got to be on a loop somewhere. I'm sure that we'll have material for ages. One other thing I want to note, you know, we focus so much on the weapons on offense in the running game and the receiving core. You can't overlook Eli Manning's performance, Paul, yesterday. 27 of 31, 337 yards, four touchdowns. Second time he's thrown at least four touchdowns this season in a game. Career high in completion percentage, just over 87%. That is a record for a complete regular season game for
right.
Eli Manning. He's had a higher completion percentage, but he hadn't played the full game. He was crisp. He was on point. And his only incompletions were essentially deflected balls, Paul, at the line of scrimmage.
Well, let's see. I got an incompletion, which I consider to be a drop by Reuben Randall in the second quarter. I'm looking for his other incompletes. Let's see here.
I know there was two deflections. I don't remember when it occurred.
All right, I'm checking.
I'm checking.
We have, let's see. We have a throwaway that was in the third quarter. Okay, so, and then we have an incompleted pass that was intended for Beckham on a slant, also in the third quarter. So those are three of your incompletes. And let's see, with the other one. The other one was a deflection. So, yeah, I'm not sure if there was a second deflection.
I thought
or maybe,
there was a second deflection.
Maybe it was still catchable.
It was very subtle or something.
It was subtle.
Then, yeah.
But you're absolutely – oh, here it is. Here it is. Tip ball in the second quarter. It was early second quarter. A fourth snap of the quarter was a tip ball.
Tip ball. So there you go.
So
there's ball.
Two deflected balls, a drop by
drop.
Randall, and a throwaway.
Throwaway. So, like you said, I mean
– that's pretty darn good.
It's not as if he overthrew a guy or there was a miscommunication or something like
no,
that.
No, that was simply to avoid the sack.
Yeah.
He chucked one.
And that's a good decision on his part in terms of keeping the play and the drive alive.
And you know what? All of you folks out there who know what we do here, I'm an Eli Manning guy. I've said that, you know, for quite a long time. And yet there are still some skeptics on him. I think they're starting to dwindle, but there still have been some skeptics on Eli Manning. Let me make one thing very clear to you. If the touchdown play that we just talked about to Beckham doesn't tell you or speak to the ingenuity, the hard work, the intelligence level, the leadership level of this quarterback, if that doesn't do it for you, how about the fact that he had a short speech with the team going into the game, and he told them, we've got to win all four games. Don't look at this any other way. It is a must win. He got emotional. He got inspired. He got excited. And he basically fired up this team as best as he could and insisted to them, hey, I'm the quarterback. Let's go. Let's get this done. Nothing else is going to be acceptable. We are going to have to win these four games. Don't even think about anything else. And it starts tonight. And he goes out there and he puts up a record-breaking performance. You love when a leader not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. And I think, you know, if you can't find it somewhere in your heart, you skeptics out there, to understand what Eli Manning's about, then you're just as blind as a bat.
Fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. That's DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Defensively, real quickly, because we have focused a lot on the offense. Giants defense, a lot of missed tackles in the first half, Paul.
Yeah.
Lamar Miller, two touchdowns. Miami took advantage of that. Second half, after that initial touchdown on the first possession in the third quarter where the Dolphins took the lead, it was Ryan Tannehill to Kenny Stills. Then they forced four consecutive punts to help seal the game. DRC and Craig Dahl, two key stops on a third and fourth down, respectively. They made the necessary stops. It was almost like a tale of two halves for the defense yesterday, Paul.
Yeah, you know, I asked Colin Jenkins and the Channel 9 postgame show, if you guys stay up to watch it, I asked him about that in particular because I thought that the Dolphins had moved the ball better than the Giants expected them to in the first half. And I simply said about, well, what kind of adjustments were made? Because you clearly clamped down on them better when you came out of the locker room. He said the coaches settled everybody down. He wouldn't tell me specifically other than to say they did simplify a few things. And there was a calming influence from the coaches, not an angry, you know, kind of explosion about, hey, why are we involved in this tight ball game, you know, when, you know, we should be a better team? Nothing like that, okay? Nothing like that. If you remember, the score at the time was 17-17, okay? And Cullen said the coaches were just very methodical and calm and just everybody settled down, okay? Settle down, and whatever they did to simplify, it worked. I thought that Jasper Brinkley played another good game at middle linebacker. And when you consider the fact that the Dolphins, you know, did want to run the ball more, and they certainly got a few runs early in the game. Lamar Miller had a couple of nice ones.
Yeah.
He finished with 12 carries for 89 yards, but he had 38 on that one touchdown. That kind of skews the numbers a little bit.
Well, they also phased him out in the second half, too, Paul, which
they did.
I was surprised. He only had five carries in the second half.
Yeah.
That's it.
But I also thought that's because the Giants' defense seemed to stiffen a little bit in the third quarter, and I think they were thinking, you know what, let's take our chances because the Giants' pass rush hasn't been great, so we'll just try to wing it. And you know what? You want Tannehill to outgun Eli? Not a good idea.
No, not a favorable circumstance. Plus, penalties piling up for the Dolphins didn't
yes.
help. They had 12 penalties. When you're in first and 20s and third and 20s, hard to run the football under those circumstances, too.
Sure.
All right, let's open up the phone lines. I'm sure a lot of people want to weigh in on a variety of different topics. Joe is in Pennsylvania. He gets us started on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great win there. We found the way to win. That's great there. Now, I can remember, Paul, you said how Eli drew that play up with Beckham. He was having that plays like that before with Cruz. I could recall a few of them. And, well, like you said early, the attack, the tackling was terrible in the first half, and you know the defense had some stops, but you know what I mean. We could be lucky too. You know what I mean. There was some drop passes there and some overthrown balls, and I just think you know what I mean. If he would threw the ball a little better, we would have been in for a closer one. Our ball skills on the defensive backs are really atrocious. Now, I don't know how you – Beckham looks so great in watching this, and I know he's so skillful and everything, but I was just thinking we could use him as Sanders used to play there. He could come out this next game. If we get Carolina, like, say, the third or long, we have to cover Ted Ginn, what's his name, that real
Ted
fast
Ginn.
Guy?
Yes, Ted. For the Panthers.
I'd throw Beckham out there if he'd do it. Maybe down the line, he's a young guy. I would think about putting him out there on defense on, like, a player like him or LaShawn Jackson. When DRC went out there in that Skins game, you see what happened.
Joe, keep in mind, I mean, you do want to preserve Odell Beckham. And remember, he had some cramps that he had to deal with, and he needed an IV, and he missed the first drive.
I understand, but I'm just saying going forward in his career, if he would be up to it. And, like, even on Landry or so like that. Because it seems like we get our teams in a lot of third and longs. And, you know, just especially, like, in this Carolina game coming up where, you know, I mean, if you could just throw them out on Ted Ginn Jr. and then put DRC to help double their tight end, you know, I'd feel pretty good with the rest pass rushing and like that because – Prince is too many games here lately. He's just getting beat. I'm sorry to say. You know, we just can't have that. So that's all. And just one other thing here on cutting guys like that. When we cut Moore here just recently and Hill before that, I think we should suspend these guys to the end and try to. Because they are very talented. They're going to be picked up right away and try to make a trade for them. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Bye. Hi, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. In terms of Odell Beckham playing as a defensive player, Paul, I would say that's highly unlikely. I mean, it's a nice thought there by Joe, but you want to make sure he survives on offense throughout a game.
There was a play at the end of a game where someone was in a deep passing information. I can't remember which game it was, and they actually thought about running him out there to be the deep safety. And then they pulled him back. There was a timeout, and then they pulled him back. They had second thoughts about it. You guys know there have been many coaches over the years. In fact, I first remember it happening a lot when Keyshawn Johnson was at USC, and they used to use him as the extra deep safety in Hail Mary situations. And then, you know, I started seeing a little bit more in the pros. It's not the first time someone's thought about doing something like that to say, okay, you know, I've seen Megatron do it.
Correct. Well, you want your best hands guys out there. That's
so,
not necessarily a surprise.
You know, in that situation, I don't necessarily think that I would object because he certainly attacks the ball and has a great radius to get it. But to make him a regular defensive back, you know, we're not talking about Roy Green here, okay? And I know I'm dating myself with that. Roy Green was a two-way receiver cornerback for the Cardinals many years ago when they were in St. Louis, and he was real good at it too. Great speed. But that's about as far as I would go to use Beckham on defense.
Roy Green, MacGyver, anything else you want to throw out? We're really going old school on today's program. It's a long way. You know, we still got about a half hour, so. The afternoon is young, as I like to say. Let's
Indeed
head back
it is.
To the phone lines. AJ's in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. The Giants did a good job in the red zone, three for four.
In absolutely. The, red zone. No, that's a good stat that you threw out there, AJ. 16 of 40 coming into the game. They took advantage of their opportunities within the 20. And I think part of that, Paul, is when you run the football – that had been an issue with inside the 20. When you run the football, it tends to open up a little bit more space because the defense needs to account for that.
We've been saying that forever, and I think that's what Lance was trying to tell you earlier in the show when he said they were more effective than the numbers indicate with the running game. The Giants were able to establish some sense of respect and balance with Rashad Jennings running as hard as he did.
He had a couple of runs in the first half that were double digits, that were for more than 10 yards. And I think that, you know, that showed not only the Dolphins that, hey, you know what, maybe we just got to check on that for a minute. And let's not kid ourselves. They're not a very good defense against the run, one of the bottom three in the league. But I think that was one thing. And the other thing was I think it also gave the Giants themselves some more confidence that, you know what, we can go to that. We're not going to have Eli throw the ball 50 times to win this game.
That was great balance. 31 pass attempts, 32 rushes. You can't ask for better balance. What else you got, AJ?
One more thing before I go. I like a real time. He emerged like the last 3 or 4 weeks. I like what I've seen for a real time, especially catch his first career touchdown.
Yeah, Ty's been efficient.
5 catches last night, and quite frankly, he's shown not only some good hands, but he's shown some ability to get yards after the catch as well, and then found the end zone. First Stony Brook NFL touchdown,
there
I might add, for Will Ty yesterday. So good for him and everybody out there on Long Island. There's no doubt to me that Eli now looks at him and says, I can rely on this guy. Not only can he get deep down the seam and I could throw it to him and he's going to make a play for me, but in addition to that, he can be a safety valve. He can be a check down guy as well, because we saw that happen a couple of times last night where, you know, he might have been the third receiver in the route, but he was in the right spot at the right time. And if you're going to be a safety valve, you've got to be. Because remember now, that means the other plays are breaking down and you're the quarterback's out. You're his life raft. Ty's proven he can do that.
In addition to that, AJ, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Ty also threw a really nice block on a Rashad Jennings run on the left sideline. I don't remember what point it was in the game. I know Bob even mentioned it on the radio broadcast. That's an area that you'd like to see him also slowly improve and slowly develop.
No question. I don't remember seeing that play. I was on the Giants sideline. I can't remember if it was the opposite or not. Being on the field, sometimes you do miss some things. I have to say, folks, it's a different perspective. Sometimes you get good stuff like you get on the bench.
Yes.
Other times you miss things from the overhead
view.
We'll
cut you some slack. It's all right.
All right, brother.
We understand. More often than not, you're on top of things. You know, once in a while you miss something on the notepad. It's not the end of the world. One thing I did want to throw out about Will Ty, Paul, 34 targets on the season, 29 receptions. So Eli Manning, that further proves when he sees Ty middle of the field or anywhere on the field, he's going to throw it to him because it more often than not leads to a reception.
And other teams have started to pay a little more attention to him, and yet he continues to find a way to get open. And that's the trick, because once they know that you are going to be a respectable part of the offense, now they start game planning a little bit. Say, you know what? We can't ignore him anymore. He's not just a player. He's not just a body. He's a live guy who can catch a ball. So they start doing some different things, and they respect him, and they cover him. Will Ty continues to make catches.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Good morning, guys. So watching last night's game, it reminded me of one of my favorite Bill Parcells quotes, is winning is a great deodorant.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I'm so glad we won the game. But as you guys mentioned, our defense in the first half was atrocious. You know, if I wish somehow they could just practice tackling, you know, for the next few days. Because, you know, just on a third and one when Collins came in and missed Jay Adeje. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
Ajayi.
That would have gotten the Giants off the field. You know, we just missed way too many tackles. We just... And also, Prince was just lost last night. You know, the last few games. I really hope that he, you know, I know he had some a few weeks off because of his pec injury. So hope he's knocking some rust off because we need him to tighten it up for this run.
Yeah, I think that did affect him, the time off, for what it's worth. And by the way, we neglected to mention at the top of the broadcast, the Giants-Vikings game has been moved.
Correct.
Has been flexed. It's now a nighttime game. So do me a favor. Don't give me any 14 degrees, okay, please? I'm probably going to be on the sidelines.
Today was the first day in the 30s of the winter. So
hey, how about that?
Well, you're talking to the right guy. Abdul's right in Minneapolis right now.
Yeah,
so
I'm
all
right
the people
here.
To get a scouting report.
I live right across from me from the new stadium.
There
so,
you go.
You know, and five minutes away from the TCF Bank. So it's been a very mild winter like it's been like the rest of the country. But it's still Minnesota, so it won't be in the 60s. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And also, one more thing I was going to mention. I'm glad that the coaches have gotten with the program, for a lack of a better term, and shorten the bench with the running back. You know, it's like in NBA. When it comes to playoffs, you shorten the bench. You know, you play your guys, because the best guys the most minutes. Because it was really, I'm glad that Jennings got at least 20 carries, or at least a back got 20 carries, so he was able to build up a rhythm. And you see what happens. You know, it was 2.9 yards per carry, but still, we were able to be productive. And the Dolphins had to respect our play action, and that's key coming up. You know, we need to keep with that same balance. And one more thing. You guys talk about Will Tye, like from Stony Brook. He also went to Florida State. So, you know, he has some pedigree to him, which is a good thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, he did wind up transferring. No, that's not anything that's going to take away from his resume, Abdul. And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
If I could throw one thing in terms of what he was talking about with the tackling, you know, it's a problem throughout the league. And for the most part, the Giants actually have not had a ton of missed tackles this season. It seemed to be an epidemic in the first half yesterday. But they've been a pretty good tackling team, I think. I know some of the analytics sites have stats on this kind of stuff. I don't necessarily always subscribe to what they say. But I would say, based on what I've seen over the last several years, this is a better tackling team the Giants have had in probably a good 3 years. I mean, most of these guys have been pretty solid in taking folks down.
Well, most of the big plays that they've surrendered, Paul, have been just missed assignments, missed right. coverage, and so forth. It hasn't been like a guy gets wrapped up and then all of a sudden
Although
he gets free.
Miller got away from JT Thomas last night.
Well, that was one. And then on the second touchdown. One, there was at least four missed tackles on the second touchdown.
Yeah, well, some of it, too, you have to give credit to the other guy, and they break tackles, too. It does happen. And Miller was certainly running hard and with authority. In the beginning of that game, so, it's certainly an interesting topic, but I don't think it's been an habitual problem for this team. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape.
I want to throw in a few tweets here, and then we will get back to the phone lines. I know a number of people want to weigh in on social media. Don at NYG and Hog, committing to the run was huge. It wasn't pretty, but it makes everything else go. Ty was big, and he blocks as well. That was certainly something that we have tackled throughout the course of the program. We have some tweets already looking ahead to the Carolina Panthers, Paul.
Wow.
Corinne at Corinne E. Tierney. Do the Panthers have any weaknesses that the Giants can take advantage of this weekend for a win? What can the Giants work on as well? That's his second part of his question.
Tonight is my study on the Panthers. I will be getting the cut-ups, the film, and I will dig knee-deep into Panthers football tonight. And tomorrow on MSG, we've got Giants press conference live. I'll be on with David Deal. We're not sure if it's going to be 11 or 11:30. Coach hasn't decided yet when he's going to talk. The schedule's totally discombobulated because of last night.
Short week.
And so I'm not sure, so please keep it tuned to Giants.com. We will get an advisory up for you right away. And I promise you, we will give you the entire lowdown on what you need to know about the Giants and the Panthers. I've just not gotten into my details yet.
Well, I will throw out one or two things about the Carolina Panthers. Number one, they're number one in takeaways in the National Football
League. They're legit.
Yes, you have to protect the football. They do not have many weaknesses, but there's at least some things that the Giants are going to have to do. Protecting the football is priority number one. I mean, it's not even a question. The good news for Carolina, or at least I should say for the Giants, Greg Olsen and Jonathan Stewart got banged up in the last game.
Correct.
There's a chance maybe, Paul, Carolina will say, we may not want to play them the whole game, we may want to rest them. So that certainly is a helpful thing for the Giants, considering Olsen, right behind Ted Ginn, is the top target for Cam, and then Jonathan Stewart has been the guy that's been pounding the football the most.
Well, consider that the Giants continue to have trouble defending the middle of the field. And that's where Greg Olsen does his business. He also happens to be from Wayne, New Jersey, which is just up the road here, out Route 208 from or out Route 80 from Giant Stadium. So you know he's going to have dozens and dozens of friends and family here at the game, and I would expect Greg Olsen to be a favorite target of Cam Newton. Not that he doesn't favor him before, but he's really going to favor him on Sunday.
Especially with the Giants' issues. And Jordan Cameron got a few catches in the first half. Second half, he was quiet, but you could tell Miami was targeting the middle of the field in those first two quarters last night.
You know, and let me just say this, too. A couple of those passes that, you know, you want a viewers dropped, again, that depends on how you look at it. Were the receivers perhaps impeded
by the oncoming defensive player, you know, with the alligator arms, like they like to say sometimes? Were they looking and anticipating the hit, and maybe that's why the ball was dropped? A couple of times the Giants' timing was right on. And even though the ball should have been caught, they were able to effectively somehow break up the play. So, yeah, Tannehill missed a few times. Sometimes he was pressured. A couple of times he just flat-out missed. That's who he is. But give the Giants' defense a little more credit in that secondary in the second half than you are, because it wasn't just total ineptitude by the Dolphins.
This point on Twitter has to do with the Giants' offense, Paul. This comes from @Farrow82, Giants fan. He says, we need to use the fullback for the third and one during a run. The first quarter, we didn't use the fullback. Should Henry Hynoski be brought back? Well, Whitlock was in for a few runs last night, and they were effective in actually getting the first down or getting the positive yardage when they utilized him. So it's not a question about whether or not they have a sufficient fullback on the roster. The question is, you know, how do they better take advantage of the personnel in the game?
Yeah, I know this. The Giants have certainly reduced the role of the fullback over time. Even Hynoski last year, I think, probably got fewer snaps than he thought he was going to get or than he had in the Super Bowl season. But here's the thing. That's what the Giants' offense is now. You know, they are much more of a one-back team. I'll say this, okay? And you've heard me say it before, but the offensive line has to do a better job of winning hat-on-a-hat battles. That ultimately is what it comes down to. I don't want to hear excuses that they need the fullback in there to get a third and two, okay? If Vince Lombardi heard you say that, he'd probably throw his hat at you. I mean, no. It's third and two? My guys up front? Show me the way. I don't need to hear that the fullback's an excuse. That's not acceptable.
Well, speaking of the offensive line, this is something that we didn't address yet on the show. A few injuries out of last night's game. Ereck Flowers re-aggravated the ankle injury.
Yes.
So Tom Coughlin's going to speak to the media later today on a conference call. I'm sure he'll provide at least an update on that. JT Thomas briefly left with an ankle injury. George Selvie's going through concussion protocol. And Marcus Kuhn, had a knee injury. So those are the four main injuries, at least out of last night's game.
Oh, and by the way, did we mention that Odell Beckham had to get some IVs during the game?
Yes.
Yeah, it really slowed him down, didn't it?
And it was funny because after the game, he was talking about how they tried to time it ideally, Paul. He missed the first drive of the second half,
he
but
did.
Then the Dolphins had an injury on a special teams play, so they felt if we time this correctly, we'll get Odell back on the field quick enough that he'll return for that second possession.
The whispers on the sideline, when Odell went in for his IV, and there were people all over the sideline. You know, there's a lot of camera people. There's a lot of Dolphins personnel,
there's
NFL personnel, et cetera.
Yes.
Okay, there's a lot of folks there on the sideline. And the whispers, oh, where's Beckham? We saw him run in. Where's Beckham? And nobody really knew at the time, you know, why he wasn't out there for those first couple of plays, as you're talking about. And then there was the timeout after the injury on specials. And I remember I said to Lisa, I said, oh, there he is. It's okay. You can relax.
Calm down.
He's there.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Chris in North Carolina. Chris, welcome aboard. What do you got?
First time caller for you guys.
Hi. Well, thanks so much for winning.
Thank you for taking my call, Lance and Paul.
You got it. Thanks for making it. Appreciate it.
All right. I got a few points here that I wrote down. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous, first time call.
No worries,
no,
not a problem.
No need to be nervous.
Take your time.
Believe me.
The first thing I wrote down, because my girlfriend is a season ticket holder for the Carolina Panthers, so I've watched a lot of games this year. And we also made the Thanksgiving game down at watching the Cowboys play the Panthers. And the things I wrote down is that the Panthers had a favorable schedule this year. And they also didn't play some of the defenses well that were pretty terrible, particularly the New Orleans Saints. And also, I came up with a conclusion with Cam. When he is rushed and disrupted early in the game, it seems like he doesn't have a really good game. And that's my points. And I'll take the what you say out the air.
Hi, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
You know, I've been very curious about all the people who want to practically crown Carolina with an undefeated season and a ticket to the Super Bowl, because we all know
that if you've watched Cam Newton in difficult times, when the ship starts taking on water, when there starts to be cracks in the dam, he usually folds. He has proven to be very immature over the course of time. He has proven to be a guy who sulks and gets rattled and tends to point fingers elsewhere. That's the Cam Newton we've seen early in his career. Now, this year, I got to confess, I've seen one Panthers game so far. Again, I got to get to the cut-ups tonight. It seems like everything's going well. I don't know how many times they've actually been pushed this year.
I have the schedule. I've seen a number of Panthers games, Paul. You look, they went to Seattle. I mean, the caller brought up the fact that they haven't been tested. I think they've been tested at times. They went into Seattle. Cam hit Greg Olsen for a late game-winning touchdown in that game.
Okay,
I mean, that went down to the wire. Indianapolis was an overtime win on Monday Night Football, had a large lead, blew it, and then they needed a field goal in overtime to win that contest. That was another one that was a nail-biter. Green Bay, big lead early. Packers slowly chip away. They got a key defensive stop in the red zone to seal that game. So there's been a number of games against quality opponents, in my opinion, and I think Carolina has answered the call. I agree that Cam can't get flustered, but here's the thing, Paul. Tannehill got flustered a bit too, but Cam, like Ryan Tannehill, can run out of the pocket.
Yes, he can.
And that's how he eludes the blitz. And keep in mind, the Giants fans, you know this, I mean, the pass rush for the Giants has been up and down throughout the course of the season. So if you're saying the one way to get to Carolina is get to the quarterback, well, you know, that's not necessarily the biggest strength for the Giants right
now. No, it's not. I mean, look, I don't need to look at the film to tell you this is a bad matchup for the Giants. I mean, they're going to need some things to go really, really well to win the game. But in terms of what I think of Cam Newton, and I quite frankly think he's probably the lead candidate to be MVP.
He's up there.
All right. I could not argue against that. My curiosity is, and you've just pointed to some games which would apparently have given them some trouble and he was able to pull through. To this point in his career, to up until the 2015 season, the characteristics that I mentioned were prevalent throughout his time with the Panthers. Has he been able to totally turn that around? Has he matured it to the point where now he can be counted on? I don't know. That's a show-me situation. And until the Panthers either get into a real crunch-time bind, and it may not be until they get into the playoffs. I mean, if you said to me right now, would you be shocked if the Panthers go undefeated and they're one and done? I'd say no. Because until Cam shows me that he can save the ship when it's taken on water, I'm not buying.
Now, that's very feasible. For example, Seattle looks like it's going to be a wild card, Paul. Seattle on the road in Carolina, tight game earlier this season with the way they're playing. Who knows? I mean, we've seen it time and time again. You can take care of business in the regular season. You can be ousted in the postseason. But, you know, you have to at least give the Panthers credit for what they've been able to accomplish.
No doubt about
that. I don't buy
the
argument, well, they haven't been tested enough on their schedule. I've seen a lot of tight games. I've seen a lot of quality opponents. And this is a team that, not that the Giants ever overlook an opponent. If anything, they actually play up for an opponent like this. They've got a good track record.
They do.
So this would be a game that I would expect to be extremely tight, regardless of whether or not Carolina's jumps off the page in terms of all their statistics.
And as you say, two defenses that love to turn people over. So, boy, this could be a very, very fun game. Again, give credit to the Panthers for everything they've done. My point is, don't anoint them anything more than that, because they still have to prove to me when they get there that they can get it done.
And you also have Arizona in the NFC, which is a quality team, too. It's not like it's just Carolina and everybody else.
By the way,
it's a few other dangerous teams.
Arizona plays the Eagles this week.
That's correct.
And the Bills play the Redskins this week. And we all know the Giants didn't get any help on Sunday from either the Bears or the Bills. But this is a tough game for the NFC East all the way around on Sunday.
Well, the Bills essentially are joining the NFC East, Paul. I don't know if you looked at Buffalo's schedule. Philadelphia, Washington, and then Dallas. So they're going to dictate what's going to happen here down the
stretch. All three games are tough, though. You can't tell me that any three of the NFC East teams are thinking, oh, this is going to be a song. It's not going to be that way.
Not at all. I mean, these are all teams that are in the postseason hunt and certainly have quality offenses, too. So you have to at least take that into consideration. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Before before we wrap up the program in a little bit, we're going to have Jeff Fiegel's selections on DraftKings from last week, so we will review how he fared. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. Anthony is in Texas. Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Lance. How's it going? First time caller here.
Well, appreciate you weighing in. What's happening, Anthony?
Hey, well, I just want to chime in on yesterday's game. I thought it was a spectacular performance by Eli. Eli doesn't receive enough credit. I'm surrounded by a whole bunch of Cowboys fans, and anytime they can knock on Eli, they always do. And I hear it every single time. But I think he really played lights out yesterday. Only 4 incompletions, and it was great. But on to next week, Carolina's going to be a tough matchup. I think that JPP is going to need to get to the quarterback. And the NFL Network analysis, I think it's Willie McGinnis, he's the one that said yesterday night that JPP is a liability. Do you feel that way, or what is your take on that?
A liability?
Yes, a liability, as in he can't really get to the quarterback if he decides to scramble outside of the pocket.
All right, here's what I would say. And it was obvious yesterday there was one tackle in particular that he missed because he tried to reach out with the club hand, and he was unable to do it. There's no doubt that there are going to be some missed tackles on his behalf, and there's also going to be some sack opportunities where if the quarterback is going at the right angle or the right way and he's got to use that club hand, he won't be able to grab his jersey and pull him down. There's no question that those things are going to happen. But to say that he's a liability across the board, that is a paintbrush that I would not, absolutely would not choose to use. He's not going to be the JPP of All-Pro from a few years ago. I agree with that because of what he's dealing with. Mm-hmm. But there are still many of opportunities where he can make tackles and he can bat down passes and he can pressure the quarterback and affect a throw and he can hit a quarterback. I'm flabbergasted by that analysis.
Yeah, so was I. I was so shocked when I heard it because we just came off a win, but I guess they just like to push us even when we're up.
Well, you know? just go back to the Tampa game, the first game he played when he got back. Look how his pressure affected Jameis Winston in the fourth quarter. I mean, look, is there any question that without JPP, the Giants don't come out of there with a win?
Yeah, especially
he
on that last
that
drive.
Game.
Yeah, where he got in the face of Jameis Winston. His pass rushing skills, Anthony, I think are still where they are, and they're probably going to even improve as he brushes the rust off. I mean, as Paul pointed out, you know, there are going to be limitations in terms of him being as effective as he was prior to the injury and stopping the run, which, remember, was a big part of his game. Now, everybody talks about, Paul, the sacks and the ability to get to the quarterback. JPP was one of the best run stoppers on this Giants defense for years since he arrived in the league. So clearly there's hurdles he has to overcome in that department. But to say he's a complete liability, I don't think that's necessarily taking into consideration what he's at least still accomplishing as a pass rusher.
Yeah, definitely.
All right,
Thank you, guys.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Continuing to move along here. Charlie is in Portland, Maine. Wow, back-to-back days we hear from Charlie. How special this is. What's happening, Charlie?
It is a special day, Lance. And
indeed.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to say that the Giants' defense in this next game coming up, we just have to play like we played against New England. If we play our defense like they played against New England, we can come out of there with a win. But we have to bring pressure, and JPP is no liability. He, with his passion and the way he's playing, he's made that defense 100 times better.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's rushing the passer. He's the guy who's getting all the other guys excited, and without him, we would not be even close of maybe winning this division.
I wonder if that wasn't misunderstood or taken out of context, because I just think that the statement as it was presented to us doesn't make a lot of sense. I find it hard to believe that Willie McGinnis would have said it that way or meant it that way. It's just not true.
Right. And who's behind him that's going to be any better? You know, there isn't like someone sitting behind him. Oh yeah, we should play him. You know, it's that's crazy. But you know, Carolina's tough. Panthers are tough. They got turnover wise, they're 18 plus. They're, you know, they've got 40 sacks. They got 3 or 4 guys who can sack the quarterback. So it's going to be up to our offensive line and also Eli getting the ball out quick. They got a guy who's got 7 interceptions in Coleman. So we got to be able to protect the ball. But we always beat undefeated teams. You know, we did it with the Patriots. We did it with Denver years ago when we had Dave Brown or Kurt, Graham.
Yeah, Monty Toomer with the touchdown.
Denver. So we always seem to play our best when we're playing against really good teams and undefeated teams. So it wouldn't surprise me if we come away with a win. But, you know, we got to play. Our defense played so well in the fourth quarter. They gave up 0 points, and they got stop after stop. I know we weren't playing the best team in the NFL in Miami, but if our defense can play like that against Carolina, I think our offense is kind of on fire, and I think that's going to help them this week. So I think we got a really good shot of beating the Panthers. So
Charlie.
I hope that's true.
You know, Charlie, before I let you go, I just want to point out, you know, you pointed out the fact that the Giants tend to play up for an unbeaten opponent. I could see the improvement in the phone call, the quality of the statistics that you throw out when the Giants play an unbeaten opponent. I'm running out of vocabulary words, Charlie. I mean, the 7 interceptions with Kurt Coleman. The only thing, you didn't mention Josh Norman, but I'll give you a pass on that. I mean, that was some quality research on your part, Charlie.
Yes, and they don't really have any great kickoff returners or punt returners. So, I mean, Ginn is a punt returner, but he's done hardly nothing. So I think our special teams could play a big role in winning this game. So,
all right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. See, he got to the cut-ups before you, Paul. Charlie's got a head start on the week. It's understandable. You were roaming the sidelines and being on
really
NFL
busy
Network,
last
of course.
Night.
Yeah, a lot of things on your plate. You know, Charlie's got a little bit more wiggle room other than looking up the pros and cons to Annika and how that helps you recover from injuries. He's got a little bit more time to experiment. All right, Scott is in our nation's capital. Scott, what's happening?
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon to you. What do you got,
how
Scott?
You well, I have one comment, one question. The comment is I've seen plenty of Carolina play today, and I hope that the coaches understand that the team has got to defend the read option run a heck of a lot better than the Giants have 3 years ago, than the Giants have 2 years ago, that the Giants have last year or last night. Both JPP and Ayers demonstrated for everyone to see that they cannot defend the read option. Cam Newton, I don't want to see him running down the field and getting 100 yards. So my comment is practice that play. Figure out how to not get sucked in inside when you're a defensive end and you have responsibility for containing a running quarterback. Otherwise, Sunday's going to be ugly. Question I have is back in August, Mr. DiTino, you said, quote, Henry Heinoski is going to be the fullback.
Yeah.
Back in August, you said, quote, I think James Jones is going to be on the 53.
Yep.
Back in August, you said Stevie Brown will have more than 3 interceptions for the Giants.
I don't know about that one, but okay. I thought he was going to start.
Fact or fiction? You can look it up in the archive.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, with hindsight now, why do you think you got those 3 things so wrong?
Well, the thing about Heinoski came down to Whitlock's ability to play defense. Versatility turned out to be a much more valuable asset for him than any of us thought, quite frankly. And Heinoski, who, unfortunately for him, you know, he's a fullback. That's all he is. And that was the determining factor. Whitlock's ability in the preseason, especially the last 2 games of the preseason, to get some pass rush from the defensive tackle spot, that's what they decided to do. They said he's a good enough fullback. He may not be as good as Heinoski, but he's good enough where we can use him as that. But using his defensive line talents that he had in college, this becomes a very, very valuable player. So I think, you know, my Heinoski comment was certainly before Whitlock inserted himself in the last week or two of the preseason into that equation. At least I would think so. That would be number one. James Jones, that's a puzzle for a lot of people. I'm going to tell you flat out. I think a lot of people are still scratching their heads why he's not part of this 53.
and I don't have an answer for you there. Only the Giants front office can tell you why. They said they made the decision based on everything that they had before them, and so that's what they get paid to do. I personally would have kept James Jones, but that's just me. Okay, so I don't have an answer for you there. The other question was about Stevie Brown. That was a real shocker because they planned on him being that deep center field safety when they signed him here. That's why he signed. He came back here, took his physical. He signed here. He was thrilled. He asked the Texans for their for his release because he knew the Giants were going to bring him back if he got put on the street.
Because of injuries and so forth.
Yes. So that was a very legitimate storyline and logic that I was following. What none of us knew is that suddenly Craig Dahl, who played for Spagnuolo in St. Louis, became available. And because he knew Spags' system so well, and Spags' defense, believe it or not, is very complicated, he just said, hey, look, as opposed to trying to coach up Stevie Brown for the next month or 3 weeks to try to get him really up to speed, I got this guy who just got cut by the St. Louis Rams today, or wherever he was at the time. I think he was with the Niners at the time. I don't have to coach him up. He could give us right away. He can give us everything we need. And he's a real good special teams player, by the way, too. He's a better special teams player than Stevie Brown. And so that's why that happened. So in hindsight, I can explain to you logically why all of these things wound up going in a different direction. But what you need to do is go back to those dates, if you could, in a little time warp, and say, well, at that time, was that a sound opinion or a sound decision? I still stand by it.
Well done. One other quickie, if I could. I heard you say a couple of dozen times that the Giants needed a contingency plan for Beeson.
Yes, I said that too.
At linebacker, and
you think I was right on that one?
What's your understanding of the difference between a contingency plan that you were thinking about and an ordinary depth chart? I mean, isn't the depth chart a contingency plan?
Well, it is and it isn't, because sometimes the guy that you have on the depth chart, when you look at a reserve, sometimes you say, look, we think that this guy's only going to play 10 to 15% of the plays as a backup. Is he good enough to do that? Yes. But now all of a sudden, if your starter gets hurt, wait a minute. That guy's really designed to be a backup. He's not designed to be a starter, even though he's number two on our depth chart. So now you have to think differently. And you have to open up the scope and say, is there anybody else out there who could be a starter? And the Giants did that when they went and got Jasper Brinkley. They determined pretty quickly when they wound up going after him that he is a better starter than their backups were just coming in and trying to fill in. Those are two different equations now. The depth chart, as you see it, is not necessarily second guy in the depth chart is our automatic starter, because when you look at a fellow as a reserve, again, he's looked at as a fellow who can pinch hit, who can come in a limited capacity. He's not always looked at as a future starter.
All right, Scott, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks so much for chiming in.
I think
you got it.
I heard the dissertation loud and clear, so I'm not necessarily
disagreeing
with that.
But he wanted football 101.
He doesn't forget anything you say.
That's fine. Glad to do it, because you know what? I bet there are a lot of people out there who are questioning things, too, and they don't understand. So that's good.
I want to get to one more phone call, but I also want to throw out a tweet. You asked about that Willie McGinnis comment that one of the previous callers threw out. Somebody on Twitter, at Toby Gleish, Giants 9-7, says it wasn't Willie McGinnis, it was Michael Robinson, and he flat out called him a liability. I haven't seen the comment, so we're all going based on what you're saying. But now there's obviously a conflict in terms of
Willie McGinnis, the defensive player, would surprise me even more had he said it.
Considering he's been on that side of the field. Understandable. All right, let's head back to the lines. Jerry is in Florida. Jerry, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
I must compliment Paul on being so alert and picking up so much detail of the game, because he talked about it. I was at the game last night. The noise, I was surrounded by half the people at the stadium were Giants fans.
They were.
High-fiving all over the place.
Let's go Giants was heard throughout the evening.
It was like the Buccaneers game. It was the same thing.
I think probably even
more. More. Really?
There were probably 95% of the seats were filled, and there were Giants fans everywhere. And even the Dolphin fans, some of them, were kind of tacitly rooting for the Giants as well. But anyway, I have to compliment you, Paul, on picking up so much detail of the game.
Thank you.
Because sitting in the stands and trying to figure out what's going on with all the noise and all the entertainment and so on, you can't really focus on the game. And so I had some impressions. My overall impression is that it kind of reminds me of how the Dolphins were in the late 80s when Marino was very competitive on the offensive side, but the defense was totally defensive.
Right.
First half, the Giants really looked bad. And, you know, every time there was a play that where they couldn't get a first down, it was agonizing. And as the Dolphins kept getting first downs, of course, the cheering was going, and the Dolphins are first and 10, and everybody's screaming first and 10. And the impression that I have is that going forward, football is probably going to be more of a technical game that is watched by people on television and less support by fans who are really into football because you can't really tell what's going on. I'm going to have to rewatch the game to figure out what's happening. And now I really understand why the coaches say sometimes after the game, I've got to see the film. And I am amazed at how much detail you picked up, Paul. You are terrific.
Well, I appreciate that. I've been doing it a long time. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Thank you,
Jerry.
And one other comment on the Panthers. They may sell out to try to continue their undefeated season, and that's one of the things that I'm concerned about coming up this weekend.
Well, Jerry, I think you're right. I mean, I don't think they're all of a sudden going to say, hey, we're 13-0, and we're just going to rest everybody for the postseason.
No.
I'm sure they want to try to get to that perfect season, considering it hasn't happened since the 72 Dolphins. So I would agree with you, Jerry, and I would expect that Carolina is going to try to get as many guys back to full health for Sunday's contest. The Giants certainly can't go into this game, Paul, banking that Greg Olsen's going to sit out, Jonathan Stewart's going to sit out. Plus, they got pretty good depth on this team, too. They have had to deal with some guys that have been banged up throughout the first 13 games.
No, they're a good team, and the Giants will have to play at their best if they're going to win.
Before we wrap things up, Jeff Fegels had some selections for DraftKings, so let's quickly review who he selected in Week 14. He took at quarterback Jameis Winston. Jameis and the Bucs did not have the game that he anticipated against the New Orleans Saints. Winston only had 18 completions for 182 yards and a touchdown. However, he did put up 13 points, but clearly that's not necessarily what you want out of the quarterback position. LeSean McCoy, the homecoming game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Not necessarily the type of numbers that everybody anticipated. Rushed for only 74 yards, no touchdowns. He scored 15 points.
Yeah.
A.J. Green, despite Andy Dalton going down, Green still had a respectable game. A.J. McCarron came in. Green finished the day 6 catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown. So we certainly commend Jeff Fegels for that selection. Green finished with 28 points. So that was his DraftKings lineup for Week 14. To draft your own lineup, go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets, a lot of good conversation on a 31-24 victory for the Giants over the Miami Dolphins. Starting tomorrow, Big Blue Kickoff live at noon. We'll look ahead to this Carolina Panthers matchup. Paul Dottino, David Deal on MSG, as well as Giants.com. We'll have you covered with Tom Coughlin's press conference. Time is up in the air, but stay locked to Giants.com. Once that is situated, we'll certainly have the latest for you. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday and stay locked right here to Giants.com.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.